Lindsay, connecting the light. I will, as usual, start with Sheldon Nidal's messages, but as I took a week off a few weeks ago, I've an additional message which I need to clear so that I can bring it up to date for the subsequent week. So what I will do today is to read extracts from the message that came through a week ago last Tuesday, and then follow on with this week's one. I never fail to comment on how informative Sheldon Nidal's messages are, and of course they come through the spiritual hierarchy and members of the Galactic Federation. Now, in the message on the 2nd of May, he mentioned that there were many important agreements which were global in scale that had been secretly reached, and that these pacts reaffirm the majority view of, he says, your secret cabals to permit a great change to occur on your world, and that this alteration of the present status quo is unprecedented. Never since before the catastrophic fall of Atlantis have the dark forces agreed to thus relinquish their 13 millennia control of your world. The Earth is approaching a point in her history where the shadowy power of evil that still grips her can at last be transformed into light. This potential existed before, but not until this moment was a force as considerable as this and long claimed by the dark able to wrest itself successfully from its former masters. This change opens the doors to possibilities most of you cannot yet fully imagine. Not only is the dark ready to retreat from your world, but it has also agreed to retire from a number of local sectors of physicality. This is important not only to you, but to all of physicality. That's a very important message, because I think that is the first time that we've learned that the Galactic Federation had been working to obtain agreements to allow first contact to proceed. I do know that at different times they have asked the Cabal to resign, which of course has been refused. And it would be obviously very interesting to us to know what this secret agreement actually means. Presumably, the dark forces have been given an alternate date by which they have to resign, because I cannot think of any other way in which the matter can be dealt with. But in the meantime, of course, they appear to be going forward with their own agenda, and we wait to see whether or not that will actually result in a preemptive attack on Iran. So everything is poised very nicely there. And of course, when they refer back to the catastrophic fall of Atlantis, it has often been mentioned that where we are now is actually a rerun of the same period of time where we face the same choice as to whether or not we go forward and take actions which, if undeterred, would again result in the destruction of the continents or even the whole planet. Now, I say that not to give fear to anyone, because the Galactic Federation have made it quite clear that they will not allow any nuclear device to be used, so the possibility of some catastrophic event caused through the use of such weapons will clearly not occur. So the message goes on to say that besides these wonderful developments, we secure positions to limit the power of your planet's last dark cabal. Don't forget that there are still vast sums of money, many hiding places, and those who covertly support this dark cabal on your world. It is therefore essential to work within the operational confines of our Earth allies. They say, however, your world is still gripped by the fear, want and mistrust so effectively laid down by your former overlords, the Anunnaki. These factors, so prevalent in your global population, prevent us from showing ourselves as openly as we would like. First contact became an operation limited by what your major governments would allow. So far, the massive cover-up continues to belie our purpose. Changing this distortion to reflect the truth of our objectives is vital to speeding up the process of first contact. There are also many religious and cultural reasons for your secret leaders to keep on with this insanity. These secret cabals believe that once these last points of control are done away with, the great chaos can result. Again, there are some interesting comments within that particular extract. And of course, the reference to the Anunnaki is such that they have, in much earlier messages, told us that they have now left, and as far as we can make out, now turned to the light. And in fact, in some messages that have come through Nancy Tate, we have heard very encouraging comments from two of the main people that were in the Anunnaki that were at the head, called Enlil and Enki. So if you want to know more about that, you can get Zachariah Sitchin's books. I think there's about 12 of them, and they contain all of the information that he extracted by translating the Sumerian tablets. They're very interesting books. I haven't read them all, but if you like that sort of thing, they're very good. Now, the message goes on to say that the recent pacts we mentioned address these issues. It is critically important that our presence and that of our heavenly supervisors be treated with the proper levels of decorum and dignity. To this end, we ask for these indispensable agreements. Your move into an abundant and free reality needs to come about with a minimum of discord. Those who control these elements in your societies must agree on the general plan of action. What has been accomplished lays down the steps and strategies for this to happen. There is now a procedure to establish the post-first contact world. Also, there is a means for the proclamations to be made by governmental, religious and cultural leaders alike. This more broad-based operation can ensure that the transition to a new reality transpires swiftly once we are formally announced. This pleases us and sets the stage for these events currently close to happening on your world. Energies are being manifested to allow for the grand governmental changes your society now desperately requires. When I get to the next part of the program, after the Sheldon Lydell messages, you'll actually see from some of the news items I've got there that there is a lot of pressure now upon the American government, from Bush, Cheney, etc. And I get a distinct impression that the attempts to impeach or remove them in one way or another are becoming stronger than ever, and it's very difficult to see how they can resist that pressure. So maybe with the secret agreement that the Galactic Federation appear to have obtained, together with the current pressure on the Bush administration, perhaps the ultimate will come about very shortly. I do not think we have too long to wait and see the outcome. The message goes on to say that these significant breakthroughs signal how precarious the agenda of your last dark cabal has become. But these dark ones are not finished yet. Among them are the last generations accustomed to being absolute controllers of your world. At present, much certain strives then, yet still they retain much more room for manoeuvre. This process of change is a road that alternates between smooth patches and potholes. Even before the start of the 19th century, this cabal's forebearers had set up huge trust funds, whose sole purpose was to provide for the skullduggery needed to maintain global control. These funds are constantly moved around and kept top secret. Limiting their use is a continual problem for our Earth allies, and thus we have long asked to be allowed to restrict their use. This need was addressed in the last series of signed agreements. It is our intention to help our allies keep track of the illegal use of these funds to buy governments, instigate disorder, and in general create conditions that support the Cabal's continuance as reigning power brokers on your planet. They go on to say that banks are simply places where these resources are safely held until they are needed. Then a diversified and covert setup is used to distribute funds to those places most conducive to achieving the dark agenda. Normally these movements are hard to track, but our technology can do this easily. It goes on to say that the main point for you never to lose sight of is that first contact is inevitable and not far off. Despite the hurdles mentioned in this message, a great deal of positive progress has been made. The awareness among our Earth allies that first contact is near has increased exponentially. This, the mounting dangers to your world posed by the trickery of the last cabal are quite worrisome, as it seems that this group persists in its desire to torch the planet should they ever lose control. Our intention is to counter this insane goal and to convince this group of the futility of such an agenda. The cornerstones of this undertaking is the divine ban on nuclear deployment. The deranged apocalyptic strategy of this dark group is thus voided. It is essential to confine this last dark cabal so that its overthrow by our Earth allies remains a foregone conclusion. I would comment there that it has been known, I think, for quite some weeks, if not months now, that there has been a divine decree which orders the non-use of nuclear devices, nuclear weapons. And one only has to look back and read about some of the experiences which have taken place at some of the sites where nuclear weapons have been kept, and the Galactic Federation have shown quite clearly that they can control their use, and they have effectively, as one might say, to put it simply, switched them on, switched them off, and shown that they can totally control their use. So that is clearly how they can insist and ensure that these devices are not used. We'll finally read from the message of the 2nd of May the following, which says, observing this last dark group and its myriad machinations are most educational. Their determination is legendary amongst us. We have countless stories to tell you once first contact is completed. Until then, we intend to ensure that your world survives the present troubles intact. We are adamant that first contact is to happen in the very short term. The growing resolve of our Earth allies encourages us to believe that our meeting with you is just around the corner. So, that will end my extracts from that message. So now to come up to date with this week's message, I will start as follows. And it initially refers to the sun, and talks about the great increase in interdimensional energies that stream toward her, and saying that this energy affects not only this solar system, but also, for example, others as far as those in Andromeda and Cassiopeia. This energy is helping to heal the fractures in space-time produced by the more devastating of the battles in the last great galactic wars, which largely ended some 200 of your years ago. This healing is permitted because a general peace treaty, fully approved by the combatants, is now in effect. It goes on to say that this energy can cause some unusual phenomena, an increase in the polar ozone holes and eccentric weather around your globe. Another side effect is heightened interference with your radio communications and your larger electrical power generators. Now, it's interesting there that the Galactic Wars have finished by mutual agreement, and here we are on this Earth still creating wars. It seems an absolute nonsense, doesn't it? But obviously, peace must come here and very soon. They talk about another item on the list of this changing the nature of the moon, and comment that the moon, of course, helps to correct the tides of the oceans, and it also stabilises the atmosphere. And they comment that lately, your moon has been delegating some of these activities to the nodal points that are eventually to become Mother Earth's two natural moons. This is part of the procedure to return your moon to his original position as one of the five moons that once served the Trans-Martian planet that some of you call Marduk, and that we prefer to call Bellona. Some observers of the moon's surface have noticed new constructions. These devices are part of this relocation work, as are the various craft recently seen floating nearby. Together with the Elohim, we are preparing your reality to fulfill her fully conscious destiny. Your solar system is likewise changing as a result of the profusion of energy streaming out from the sun. Even now, the lost innermost world of Vulcan and the outermost and largest of the inner planets, Bellona, are to be reinstated in orbit around their great mother, the sun. Six outer planets are similarly being prepared to take an active role in a wholly reconstituted solar system. This involves recapturing many moons that have floated free from their planets and now wander the solar system as so-called planetoids. A prime example is Pluto, other are Sirius and Chiron. These small worlds are important to the future of this system as a whole. Much is mere flotsam, pieces of Bellona that drifted out into space and established orbits around the sun. Some are moons or pieces of moons that need to be lassoed and returned to their former mistresses. It is clear from this that your astronomers need to change their definition of a solar system. They comment further that solar systems can have as few as 2 to 3 worlds or as many as 24. And that most of the systems hosting highly sentient beings have from 6 to 12 planets. Yours is to be returned to a system of 12 planets. They then go on to say that when finished, your solar system will have a base harmonic that is sympathetic with the Sirius B system. In the near future, this resonance can allow your solar system to drift much closer to Sirius B. They refer back to each solar system, saying that they are generally composed of sub-realities, and normally each planet is enveloped in its own sub-reality, and since these sub-realities are so similar, they fit together almost seamlessly. Realities are based on the collective belief system. They constitute the lens through which you view yourselves and your physical world. Now, however, your perceptions are about to change. When they do, the physical construct of your world will change. Things you did not notice before will become real and take on great significance. This process is part of the great shift in consciousness that you are undergoing. The immensity of this shift's last stages is one of the main reasons why we are here to complete our first contact with you in the very near future. These changes in your reality and in those surrounding you are an important byproduct of your move back into full consciousness. They then go on to talk about physical creation, saying that it is by nature quite magical. Its apparently staid and solid aspect is deceptive. In fact, creation is permeable and given to frequent change. The critical factor is consciousness. When you began over a century ago to loosen the bonds with your traditions, you moved away from the means that tied you to a limited consciousness reality. This process was further accelerated by the interventions of the beg your pardon, this process was further accelerated by inventions that moved you first into the age of electricity and then super electronics. Heaven pre-planned these developments, and now the time has come to end the dominance of the dark and return this world to the light. This undertaking required the sanction of the dark. The key to their acquiescence was greed, long a province of the dark. Once their consent was given, you were hurtled to the very brink of first contact and the rewards of full consciousness. They say everything around you, including you and your known universe, is changing at a great rate. The world you know is destined to alter in the twinkling of an eye, but this can only take place after what seems to you to be a most trying period of waiting. Soaring global chaos and other related but ostensibly illogical events. Try to take this all in your stride. The magical process of morphing a reality can be distressing and strange at times, and interspersed with bouts of frustration. This peculiar soup is your current daily reality. We ask you to view it with empathy and to bring your combined superb abilities to bear on hastening the arrival of your new reality. And that is where I shall conclude my comments on the two Sheldon Neidel messages. It's interesting that they say that the world we know is going to alter in the twinkling of an eye. And I have to think to myself that when the consciousness reaches a certain critical mass, it does automatically bring about that change. So that's very interesting, because a lot of people, I think, wonder what actually happens at that point in time. So there you are, there's a clue. Now, I'm going to come to what I call general news, and up until today, I didn't think there was too much to talk about, but suddenly I had a little flurry of emails from which I'd taken what I hope you'll find to be some interesting extracts. I guess the biggest event of the week has been the resignation of Paul de Gos, and in one of my own messages, which I consider possibly to have been a high point of the week, there is an indication that this is only the start of much bigger happenings. So it will be interesting to see, but I think that's one of many pressures now that are upon the dark. I saw an email today which came from Raw Story, and it was published yesterday, and the heading said, "Let's all pray this is a true happening. Networks plan stakeout of Fitzgerald Court Friday," which is of course today, and they say no formal sign of indictment. And apparently reporters at the major cable television networks plan to be on the ground today outside a federal district court where the jury considering the fate of President Bush's senior advisor, Karl Rove. No formal indication has been given of Rove's status, though lawyers close to the case have said his fate is likely to be determined soon. And Special Counsel Patrick J. Fitzgerald, who is investigating the outing of CIA officer Valerie Plame, is scheduled to meet with the grand jury in the case today. The major networks plan to have reporters live on the ground, a senior reporter said, and two White House reporters covering the case said they had not heard anything about new Rove developments, though they confirmed that the grand jury is scheduled to meet. Rove testified for the fifth time on April the 26th, and legal experts have said that those who appear before the grand jury on multiple occasions are more likely be indicted. The Washington Post recently reported Fitzgerald, according to sources close to the case, is reviewing testimony from Rove's five appearances before the grand jury. And President Bush's top political strategist has argued that he never intentionally misled the grand jury about his role in leaking information about undercover CIA officer Valerie Plame to the Time magazine reporter Matthew Cooper in July 2003, and Rove testified that he simply forgot about the conversation when he failed to disclose it to Fitzgerald earlier in testimony. So there you are. What are we, just after midday in most places, or from where this broadcast is being made, so possibly this is actually going on at this very moment. From the website opednews.com, there was mention of a poll that was carried out using the first choice of TV news networks as a demographic variable. And the poll was to determine whether they thought that the 2004 election was stolen. So the poll asked them to simply state whether they thought it was stolen or whether it was legitimate. And it's interesting that out of the 7 stations that they took the poll from, only one, which was Fox, thought that the larger percentage were legitimate. Quite astonishing figures, really, compared to the rest. 5% thought it was stolen and 99% legitimate. And the other 6, ranging from 49% to 70%, all thought on majority that the election was stolen. The highest one was CNN at 70%, followed by MSNBC at 65%. So there we are. That's interesting, isn't it? It shows you what a move has taken place amongst the people and how the evidence about the rigged poll and possibly the one before that is making some impact amongst people. So that is yet another pressure upon the Bush government. Now, I can't quote the source of this information, but again, there was an email being passed around saying that your mobile phone lets companies and the government know where you are, even when you're not making a call. And it reads that telecom companies and government are not eager to advertise that tracking capability, nor will companies admit whether they are archiving the breadcrumb trail of pings from a cell phone so that they or authorities can trace back after the fact where the customer had been at a particular time. Of course, there is that capability, says Bruce Schneier, Chief Technical Officer with Counterpane Internet Security. And he said, quote, Verizon and the other companies have access to that information, and the odds are zero that they wouldn't sell if it is legal and profitable. That is capitalism, after all. But there you are, that's a rather interesting bit of information there. From the site progressivedailybeacon.com came a short bit of information from A. Alexander. This came out yesterday, and it was reading that this isn't political, this isn't politics as usual, this isn't partisan, this isn't about right versus left, this isn't about Democrat and Republican. This is tyranny and this is personal. And why did he say that? Because he has quoted that George W. Bush lied when he said NSA spying wasn't a domestic program. And he said it is exactly a domestic spy program. And what's more, ATT, Bell South and Verizon have been assisting the Bush government in creating what is being described as, and I quote, the largest database ever assembled in the world. And the goal is, to quote, to create a database of every cell call ever made within America's borders. So there we are. There's Big Brother at his best. And clearly, if one wants to stop all this taking place and becoming even more draconian, there have to be some changes made. Now, here's an item that I thought was just purely one out of interest. It's quite astonishing, really. And it came from a site called whatsreallyhappened.com. And it, amongst other items, and this came out on May the 7th, it talks about Russian bombers that flew undetected across the Arctic. And it reads that the commander of the country's long-range strategic bombers, Lieutenant General Igor Khorov, said the US Air Force is now investigating why its military was unable to detect the Russian bombers. And he said, quote, they were unable to detect the planes either with radars or visually. And he comments that as Bush pushes forward into war with Iran, which in turn could lead to war with Russia, here is a little news item that will keep you awake at night. And it reads, during a recent war game, the Russian bombers were able to fly across the Arctic into Canada and carry out 4 simulated missile attacks against the US without being detected by NORAD and the US Air Force. So, that's interesting, isn't it? If not a bit scary, but you do wonder why Russia should simulate attacks on the US, but I suppose that a possible war on Iran could force people to take sides. And as you may be aware, China and Russia do tend to side with Iran when it comes to these issues. So we just hope, do we not, that nothing like that happens. From the website chicagoindymedia.org came an article by Kevin Barrett. And this came out on Saturday last, which was May the 6th, from Madison. And it reads that an enthusiastic standing room only crowd at the Wisconsin Historical Society Auditorium Saturday, that was May the 6th, to hear ex-Bush administration insider Morgan Reynolds prosecute top administration and military officials for the 9/11 inside job. Now, it says, Reynolds indicted Richard Cheney, George W. Bush, former Joint Chiefs Chairman Richard Myers, confessed WTC demolisher and insurance fraudster Larry Silverstein and others for mass murder, conspiracy, and other charges, including high treason. The enthusiastic response from the overflow crowd was a de facto vote for conviction on all counts. The former director of the Criminal Justice Center at the National Center for Policy Analysis showed that the defendants conspired to create a false cover story of suicide hijackings in order to blow the World Trade Center to kingdom come with explosives, a shock and awe psyop designed to coerce the American people into supporting a pre-planned long war in the Middle East. Massive increases in military spending and the rollback of constitutional civil liberties. And Reynolds stated that everyone in the worldwide intelligence community knew that 9/11 was an inside job as soon as it happened, with the obvious stand down of US air defenses, controlled demolition of the World Trade Center, and non-protection of the president in Florida being the biggest tip-offs. And also the head of the Russian equivalent of Joint Chiefs of Staff, the former head of the German intelligence service, Andreas von Bülow, former National Security Agent official Wayne Madsen, and former MI6 agent David Shaler have all openly called 9/11 an inside job, while the former CIA official Ray McGovern has confirmed this directly in private, and indirectly in public by the way of his ringing endorsement of David Ray Griffin's work on 9/11. That's astonishing, isn't it? I mean, this is quite something. And yet again, there is another source of strong pressure on Bush and his government. And finally, on the general news front, I read an item that came from the site that's quite active called afterdowningstreet.org. And it was by David Swanson on May the 9th, and it was referring to Ray McGovern, saying that he was wanting to ask Donald Rumsfeld why he lied us into a war, and saying that Ray wants answers, and he's taking his demand to Donald Rumsfeld's house in Washington. And it said that on Thursday, May the 18th, a large coalition of groups is planning to deliver to the White House all the signatures and comments posted on the petition at the site, don'tattackiran.org. And as the name of the site suggests, The petition simply asks the President and Vice President not to launch another aggressive attack on foreign soil, an attack that would necessarily be promoted with lies, lies that are already being spread by the Bush administration. Towards the end of the event, they say that that lovely lady, very active lady, Cindy Sheehan, will lead in delivering the petition and signatures and comments to the White House. And at 3 p.m., they will head off in a march to Donald Rumsfeld's house with Ray McGovern leading the way. And their demand to Rumsfeld is simply, why did you lie? So there we are. Yet another bit of action, and it all seems to be happening all of a sudden, doesn't it? It's all coming together. Now, for a week or two, I haven't had anything, or been able to fit anything in on the UFO front, but I've got a couple of small bits here, which so it's worth introducing that subject again. And there is an email from Horst Hector, who tends to circulate different messages that he picks up, mainly on spiritual channeling and the likes, which he passes around to many people, including myself. And he actually quoted about a UFO sighting that he personally experienced. It's worth mentioning. He was saying that it was a Wednesday evening at about 10:45 in the southern part of Montreal, La Salle to be exact, when he saw a flyover. And he said there was one vehicle moving very fast from west to east, and then two helicopters went behind it. He said so slow, how they were going to catch up, I'm not sure. But he said then higher up he saw another, and then he brought his daughter out to witness it. And he said it moved northwest and then turned and went west, and then he saw it zigzag, and all of a sudden they saw three of them flying in formation. Now here is the interesting bit. This isn't totally unusual, it's not the first time it's happened, but he mentally asked them to circle, and they did in fact do that. And he said, now my questions are this, always technology to help the Earth. Flyovers have begun, look and find them for yourself, it will not be long now. At one time I faced serious persecution, everyone thinking I'm crazy. Now people are looking at me as if I thought I was talking about something new. So the reality shift has been complete. And he says, others are beginning to openly ask the questions about their sciences and technology so we can help protect the Earth. The time is at hand. That's an interesting little one. There's a story that's been around quite a little while by Preston Dennett talking about his own personal experiences. In fact, the whole thing was about 11 pages long, so I don't intend to read all of that. But I thought it was interesting the manner in which his experiences started, and the article comments on the fact that UFO contact comes in many different forms, and some people have sightings of the craft, others have onboard experiences, some experience bedroom visitations, others have only telepathic contact or even claim to chant ETs. But there is another form of contact that is so rare there have only been a few reported cases. And these unique cases involve UFO contact through a simple instrument found in most homes, the telephone. As bizarre as this sounds, enough accounts have turned up to merit a serious investigation. I have to comment at that point that in the very early days of contact, I think the telephone, funnily enough, was used to contact one or two people. And if my memory serves me correctly, I think George Adamski was one such person. Anyway, the article goes on to say that a flying saucer called me up. And apparently the person involved is Jack Sarfati. He's today a prominent quantum physicist. And it says, unknown to many, however, is that he may owe some of his success to a very unusual experience, a phone call from a flying saucer. The whole ordeal began more than 50 years ago. And says Sarfati, in 1952 and 1953, when I was about 12 or 13 years old, I received a phone call in which a mechanical sounding voice at the other end said it was a computer on board a flying saucer. They wanted to teach me something, and would I be willing? That was my free choice. Would I be willing to be taught to communicate with them? And he says, I remember a shiver going up my spine because I said, hey man, this is real. Of course, I was a kid, and I said yes. Sarfati was impressed. He ran and got his friends, and they gathered together in his bedroom, awaiting the upcoming promised contact. Unfortunately, nothing occurred, and Sarfati assumed at first that it was just a clever, practical joke. He said at this point, his memory of the event strangely ends, but according to Sarfati's mother, the first phone call was followed by a series of similar phone calls, each giving Sarfati information that would leave him forever changed. So there we are. I thought that was a neat introduction to one contact that took place. So if you're interested in the whole thing, I'm guessing if you put a search in for Jack Sarfati, and that's spelled S-A-R-F-A-T-T-I, you would probably find the whole article about that. I've also got a couple of items here on what I call my ET file, and one of them was reference to a very good friend of mine who's an excellent psychic, and he takes messages longhand, and he's with people from spirit or and ETs and so forth virtually the whole time. He's quite an unusual character, and they were speaking to him because they are carrying out some sort of changes on his physical body, and one of the doctors in the team from spirit said, as you know, a seed is first sown. It takes root and it grows by light. And that is more to the fact and how we spirit doctors work. Slowly and bit by bit until it becomes manifest, a physical result is then attained. And it really is, bit by bit, a very slow process indeed. And he says, spirit surgeons are not any more physical and cannot work on Earth's physical people as they once did. So another method is used. He says, we are, after all, invisible to the material populace at large and cannot pick up scalpel, needle and thread, but we can speak to a medium and we can show our spirit light to a sensitive on earth and be able through mental telepathy to commune, saying that we are forced to do operations by light alone, mentioning that even then to operate on yourself is practically an impossible task. We take the remaining option open to us. We beam you up to a UFO, saying to him, this is my friend, as we did the other night, and you were aware of that, yes. Once inside the UFO, you were operated on by me and a team of surgeons. Today, you would call that very cool, and that is by cooperation with many Venusians. Otherwise, that could never happen. It is the etheric body, of course, that we can use and do an operation on you. Not the physical body, I hasten to say. And that is the only way we can get our hands on you. Once we turn safely back to Earth and realigned with you, with your physical body as you sleep in your bed, a healing takes place between what we did in the UFO operations room and upon Earth's physical body. Simply effective. And it works. They say the end result is a miracle on earth. Reminds me of a bit of another item I brought up on the program in the earlier weeks, and that is about David Devere, who has passed on now, but he set up a whole series of healing centres in Israel. I think they numbered about 50 in the end, and he had direct telepathic communication with ETs, and he had a friend who worked with him called Chaya, who was also psychic and could actually see them, so they got confirmation between each other what was taking place. And they helped the people at the healing centres to carry out healing using methods, by the sound of it, very similar to what I've just mentioned. So that's interesting, but a bit different, that one. The other one I have relates to a group called the Verdants. And I must confess, the name seemed familiar to me, and I thought I had seen a message from them some time ago. And that may, of course, be the case. I'll have to have a look and see if I can find any evidence of that. But the person circulating the message, and let me see, is there a website? Can't see one just off the cuff. that the person by name who sent the email around is Glenda G. Libbert, says that a few weeks ago, several friends and I had a contact experience with a group of ETs that call themselves the Verdants. Our group was split in two locations, and the telepathic transmissions we received confirmed each other. And she says, below is a message from the Verdants that was accompanied by a vision of a global stand down of all nuclear weapons. It's saying here that you can watch or listen to the podcast at the website choosepeacenow.net. There we are, you can go to that one and get the full version. But I will just comment on some of the contents of this message. Basically, it's telling us that they are emissaries of galactic peace and that they represent many worlds and civilizations who coexist peacefully in space. And they come to us to introduce themselves and the agreement of galactic peace that will allow us to become part of the galactic community. And they say, you are now ready to take the necessary steps for entering into this agreement so that you may begin to explore space and meet your galactic family. I have to say at that point, and I think, although it doesn't state it as a fact, that these people must be actually part of the Galactic Federation, which members I also channel myself, because what they're saying there tends to be the same type of thing. They say that it is important for the next stage of your growth and evolution that you're willing to give up the ability to threaten others with weapons on a mass scale. And they say, the ability to make threats and demands based upon fear will not be tolerated in space and will be detrimental to your growth as a unified consciousness in the near future. It is necessary for you to give up nuclear weapons so that you may join with the galactic community in peace. Now, if you recall some of the comments in Sheldon Idle's messages, you'll see how relevant this one is. And this actually came through, believe it or not, in February this year. I'll say it appears from the date here. Oh, maybe I'm sorry, it's not February. It's actually the 2nd of May, I beg your pardon, not many days ago. So some of the comments there tie in very much so with Sheldon Idle's people and also other messages we've seen. They go on to say that we are offering to disarm all nuclear weapons for you globally if you agree to this. We understand that it is difficult in an environment of fear for you to trust each other to do this as one. That is why we offer this agreement. You do not have to take this step alone, and we will not proceed until you are ready. As more of you choose this reality, the potential of achieving a global stand down of all nuclear weapons will become more present within the awareness of humanity and thus within the minds of those who possess and guard these weapons. I'm guessing that what they mean there is, since we can't actually write or contact anybody to say we agree, is if mentally we put out our agreement to that idea, then that will increase the consciousness upon the earth for that peaceful conclusion. And I suppose they have an awareness of our level of consciousness in that respect, so I'm guessing that's the way they get their answer. The message goes on somewhat longer, and they go on to say that you'll find that after all nuclear weapons are disarmed, your civilization will move rapidly towards a more peaceful existence. The environment of fear created by the presence of the nuclear threat supports fear-based patterns of behavior that creates much of the violence in your world. Without the threat of global violence, violence at an individual level will begin to noticeably diminish. The potential to heal the global community is alive and active, and without the threat of global violence, this potential will become amplified and more available than ever before. Yes, indeed, I'll go along with that. Violence begets violence, doesn't it? One has to say, with the emphasis, perhaps in certain films, television, newspapers and so forth, is it any wonder, perhaps, that there is so much violence around? Now, that's the end of those articles, and I will now conclude the programme by looking at one or two other messages of light. There was one that didn't seem to amount to anything in the end, although It was one that came out, certainly I saw it on the 5th of May, circulated by somebody called Niang. It was a message by St. Andrew on the Second Coming, and it's updated apparently on a daily basis. And this was the 5th of May, and it was saying that it would be an historic day for you and your country. There is planned to be a special announcement from your government tonight, and we are not sure of what will be broadcast. However, it may be the resignation of your president, or it may be the announcement of the rainbow currency, or both. At any rate, it will be a memorable day if all goes as planned, following the completion of the distribution of the prosperity funds that has been going on this week. Now, the message is only very brief anyway, but that's the bit I wanted to mention, because for anybody who's followed Nasara, any mention of the rainbow currency or completion of the distribution of prosperity funds is obviously interesting, and it is nice to know that that is still alive and well. There wasn't, of course, that announcement from the government as anticipated. The only one, of course, around that time was Hort of Goss. So it does seem to indicate, at the very least, that this energy for the resignation of Bush, possibly, is growing. So here we are. It's interesting. It didn't come to anything, but it still is meaningful, I feel. There was another message going back to mid-April, and again it was from St. Andrew. And this is a message that came through Lauren. I must say, personally, I generally find her quality of channeling very good. And St. Andrew was saying, I come with legions of light beings to assist in the completion of the process on earth, the process of duality. And he said, today, talking of light beings, we infiltrate your skies and determine when we shall finish this old business. We are set up now and prepared for proper divine intervention in every aspect of your world affairs. We come from far and wide to support you on this mission of peace, and we are obligated with joy to answer your many requests of sovereignty. Take hold, for ye shall not pervade untruths any longer, and as decreed by the Creator you shall be saved. It is time now for a great promise to be fulfilled, a promise that you have waited in earnest for. Today we say, buckle up, for the ride will be bumpy, but to meet the requirements of galactic intervention, we must wash away all that is depleting your well-being with great force. We affirm that this is the month of great change, and as decreed by heaven, this must be so. One would comment that the message came out in April, and we can't see any immediate signs of those particular changes, but they're clearly in being. And all right, April to May doesn't make much difference as long as it actually comes out. I'll read finally from that message a part that said, as it has been decreed by the Father, we shall proceed with this timetable with no expected delays, and shall bring forth the new world as promised. Those who waver, we say, hold steadfast to your goal. The determining factor of change is found within, and the effects of this change will appear without. This is a basic law of energy, that what you think, you actualize. You have been thinking of these changes for many years, and now you have begun to actualize your thoughts. Be at peace within, regardless of without, for you shall need these tools to get you through the next phase of your reality. This tool is the most valuable. So there you are. Does confirm that we are actualizing our thoughts. So the thought forms that we create have power, and there does come a point where it happens, which is great. I shall read now yet again another message that came through Lauren from St. Andrew. This was mid-April. It's a very interesting one. So in view of the time aspect here, I will be able to fit it in, and I will read extracts as follow. Talking of the times ahead, St. Andrew said, as we perceive all that is before you, we claim to know the outcome of your present intent. This laid before you would astound you, and you would be grateful for your times of woe. We wish to impart some pertinent information that will be beneficial for your upcoming days. At this time, there is a scheduled great uprising of the American people. This energy is so large now that nothing but an act of God could curtail it. We say this to you with encouragement, for this is the time you have beckoned. You who know truth will set the world free. Therefore, it is up to you to take matters into your own hands now and trust that we are behind you. As the gravitational pull toward Earth ascends, you are already in for a grand experience that has never played out in your realm. This grand experience is one that will undoubtedly shake your country to the core. Once again, you will be free, and once again, you will regain consciousness. Toward the end of past civilization, you who were prophets and seers knew of the impending cataclysmic changes that were upon you. Now, in the rising of the enlightened age, you who are the prophets and seers know an impending upheaval once again is upon you, yet this time we assure you that you shall prevail. And I will finally read from that message. We call to you to rise up. We call to you to take back what is rightfully yours. As we approach these days of uprising, know that your reality will be very different indeed. It is difficult to explain with words how this will take form, but we say to you that you will indeed be joyous. Know that as we descend to your beloved planet, you too shall rise up to meet us. In this merging of light, we will allow for many unforeseeable opportunities to arise, and in them, we will take a firm hold on the forces of evil. You have already prevailed, and we are here to confirm that your day of lifting is before you now. The light of Creator is upon you all as we celebrate this very special advent. We are especially proud to be part of something so gracious, and we celebrate with you all. Go in peace to prepare for your new roles on this very new earth. You have fared well, and you, my children, are the Christed ones. I am Sananda Emmanuel. That's lovely, isn't it? That came out near Easter time. But like a lot of these messages, I mean, it doesn't really age, and the contents are still applicable. In fact, sometimes as time goes by, they become even more applicable, because looking back, you can see how the prediction there of what is going to happen is really taking place. Anyway, I have to say that is the end of what I have for you tonight. I do hope you enjoyed it. I do try and pick out items that I feel would be of interest, and in certain ways connect together. In following the general news, I think one has to know what is happening, say, on the negative side, and how we're coping with it or responding to it, so that we can understand how messages like Sheldon Neidl's and the promise there are working out. Anyway, I'll leave you with those thoughts. Thank you for being with me. I hope you'll be with me next week, and I would like to say God bless you all.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.